A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about the moment you cross a line with AI, without really noticing you've crossed it. Iz was a $70 ergonomic vertical mouse. He asked ChatGPT to size up the options on Amazon, and then he actually bought what it recommended. Not a life-changing sum, but well past what you'd spend on a whim. And now his in-laws are visiting a site recommended by an AI-generated book he made for them, and they're skeptical of the whole thing. So his question is, what are these little Rubicons people cross? These small, personal leaps of faith that quietly mark the moment you've entered a new relationship with machine intelligence. And what does it look like when that trust starts compounding?
A $70 mouse. I love that as the entry point. It's so mundane. Nobody's handing over their retirement portfolio. Nobody's letting an algorithm drive them to the airport. It's a mouse. But that's exactly why it matters.
It's the banality of the leap.
Right. And the thing is, Daniel's not unusual here. I pulled up some work out of PubMed on this. Researchers looking at how trust actually forms in AI-supported decision-making. The finding that jumped out is that trust isn't binary. It's not a switch that flips. It's calibrated through repeated low-stakes interactions where the user performs what they call intermediate judgments. You don't just accept the output. You do a lightweight verification. Does this look right? And then you proceed. Over time, that verification shrinks. You stop checking every review. You start trusting the pattern.
So the $70 isn't just a purchase. It's a test with a receipt.
And the amount matters. $70 is above what behavioral economists call the pain of paying threshold, the point where spending stops being trivial and triggers actual deliberation. Below 20 bucks, most people don't think twice. Above 50 or 60, you pause. You compare. Delegating that deliberation to an AI, that's a genuine trust act.
Delegating the pause.
Yes, you're outsourcing the moment of friction. And if the mouse shows up and it's comfortable and your wrist doesn't hurt after 8 hours of typing, the AI just banked a win. A small one, but real.
Walk me through what Daniel probably actually did.
Okay, so he's on Amazon. He wants an ergonomic vertical mouse. He could spend an hour reading reviews, comparing grip angles, looking at DPI specs. Instead, he opens ChatGPT and says, essentially, here's what I'm looking for. Size up the options. The AI returns a recommendation, probably with reasoning. This model has a better sensor. This one has a more natural hand position. This one has reliability complaints in the reviews.
And he reads the reasoning.
He reads the reasoning. That's the intermediate judgment. He's not blindly clicking buy. He's evaluating the AI's logic. Does the reasoning hold up? Does it match what he vaguely knows about mice? Then he probably spot checks. Glances at a couple of the negative reviews on the recommended model, confirms the AI didn't miss something catastrophic. And then he pulls the trigger.
So the trust isn't in the recommendation. It's in the reasoning behind the recommendation.
That's the thing. The AI is earning trust by showing its work. And that's consistent with the research. Users don't trust outputs, they trust processes. When the process looks sound, they accept the output. When it doesn't, they reject it or verify more deeply.
Which means the real Rubicon isn't the purchase. It's the moment he decided the reasoning was good enough to act on.
Yes. And here's where it gets interesting. Each time that happens, each time the AI's reasoning checks out and the outcome is positive, the verification step gets lighter. The first time, you read every word. The fifth time, you skim. The 20th time, you barely glance. That's trust calibration. It's not a declaration, it's a habit.
A habit of not checking.
A habit of not needing to check. And that's the bridge to the next thing Daniel mentioned. The in-laws, the AI-generated book, the trip. Because that's trust at one remove.
Let's go there. But first, I want to name something about the mouse that I think is easy to miss. $70 isn't just above the deliberation threshold. It's also below the regret threshold. If the mouse is terrible, Daniel's annoyed for a day, he returns it. The story becomes a funny anecdote. The stakes are calibrated so that failure is survivable. That's not an accident. People don't start by trusting AI with their mortgage. They start with a thing where the downside is a minor inconvenience and a return shipping label.
That's the scaffolding. Each successful low-stakes decision builds a platform for the next one. The $70 mouse scaffolds toward a $300 flight recommendation. The flight scaffolds toward a $2,000 vacation booking. You're not making a single giant leap of faith. You're building a staircase out of small ones.
And at some point you stop noticing you're on the staircase.
Right. Which brings us to the in-laws, because they didn't build the staircase. They're being handed the penthouse and told the foundation is solid.
Daniel made them a book. AI generated. It recommended a site. They're visiting it. They're skeptical of AI. What's actually happening in that dynamic?
So there are a couple of layers here. First, we don't know if the in-laws know the book was AI generated. Daniel says they're skeptical of AI, which suggests they do know, or at least suspect. But even if they know, the book is a physical object. It looks like a book. It reads like a book. The AI's role is partly invisible. That's what I'd call trust by proxy. They're trusting the book, which was created with AI, but they may be attributing the quality to Daniel as the human who made it.
The AI is the ghostwriter, and Daniel gets the byline.
And if the trip goes well, if the site is interesting, if they have a good time, what happens to their skepticism?
Depends on whether they attribute the success to the AI or to Daniel.
And that's the asymmetry. If the trip is great, they might say, Daniel found us this wonderful place. The AI's role gets erased. If the trip is terrible, they might say, this is what happens when you trust a computer to recommend a vacation. The AI gets the blame, Daniel gets the credit.
Which is actually a pretty good deal for Daniel.
In the short term. But it means the trust isn't transferring to the AI. It's transferring to Daniel as a curator. The AI is building Daniel's credibility, not its own.
And that's a problem if the goal is to get the in-laws to trust AI directly. They need to know the AI was involved, and they need to see it work, and they need to see it work repeatedly. One good trip isn't going to do it.
The research on this is pretty clear. Skeptics require a higher burden of proof than early adopters. A single positive experience can be dismissed as luck. It takes multiple consistent successes to shift a skeptical attitude. And here's the kicker. Trust erodes faster than it builds. One failure can undo weeks or months of trust building. It's a well-documented finding in human-AI interaction research. Trust is asymmetric in both directions, hard to earn, easy to lose.
So, if the in-laws' trip goes badly, if the site is underwhelming, or the directions are wrong, or the place is closed, that's not just a neutral data point. That's a trust debt that'll take multiple positive experiences to repay.
If it can be repaid at all. Some people, after one bad experience, just close the door permanently. I tried that AI thing once, and it was terrible. That's the end of the conversation.
Which makes the stakes of that first recommendation surprisingly high. Daniel's not just recommending a site. He's running a trust experiment on his in-laws with a sample size of one.
And he probably didn't frame it that way to himself. He made them a book. It was a nice gesture. But underneath that nice gesture is this whole machinery of trust calibration, and the machinery is fragile.
Let's pull back for a second. Daniel asks what these Rubicon moments look like for different users. We've got the solo consumer, the mouse buyer, calibrating trust through repeated low-stakes verification. We've got the social proxy case, the in-laws, where trust is mediated through a human curator. What are the other patterns?
I think there's a third one that's becoming really common, the workplace Rubicon. Someone uses an AI tool at work for the first time on something that matters, not a toy project, not a demo, but actual output that someone's going to see, a report, a slide deck, a piece of code, and they have that moment of hesitation before they send it.
The, am I really going to put my name on this moment?
That's the one. And it's different from the consumer case because the stakes are reputational. If the mouse is bad, nobody knows but you. If the AI-generated report has an error and your boss finds it, that's a different kind of cost.
So the verification step is heavier. More intermediate judgments.
At first. But the same calibration process kicks in. You send the report, the boss says, nice work, you exhale. Next time, you check a little less. By the 10th time, you're barely checking at all. Which, honestly, is where the danger lives. Because the AI is probabilistic. It'll eventually be wrong about something. And if you stop verifying, you won't catch it.
That's the trust trap. The system works so consistently that you stop treating it as probabilistic, and then it fails in a way you're no longer equipped to notice.
And the failure mode is asymmetrical in a really specific way. The AI doesn't fail randomly across the whole domain. It fails in clusters, at the edges of its training distribution, on rare cases, on ambiguous inputs. So you can have 100 successes in a row on common cases, build up enormous trust, and then get blindsided by a failure on something that looked exactly like all the other cases to you, but was subtly different to the model.
Which is why the calibration never really finishes. You're always making a bet about whether this particular case is inside or outside the model's competence boundary, and you're making that bet with less and less information as you stop verifying.
Right. And this connects back to something Daniel hinted at, this idea of entering a new era of the relationship. I think what he's describing is the moment when the default flips. Early on, the default is, I'll verify this. Later, the default becomes, I'll trust this unless something seems off. That flip is the Rubicon. You might not even notice when it happens.
The default flip. That's good. And once the default flips, you're in a different relationship. The AI isn't a tool you consult anymore. It's a partner you delegate to. The burden of proof shifts. Now the AI has to give you a reason to doubt it, rather than you needing a reason to trust it.
And that's where the in-laws are interesting in a different way. Their default hasn't flipped. Their default is still skepticism. The burden of proof is on the AI, or on Daniel, as the AI's proxy. One good trip doesn't flip the default. It just loosens it a little.
Creates a crack.
A crack. And maybe that's all a single positive experience can do for a skeptic. It doesn't convert them. It just makes the skepticism feel a little less certain. Well, that one thing worked. And then maybe they're slightly more open to the next thing. And the next. And eventually, without ever having a single dramatic conversion moment, the default flips.
The staircase works on skeptics too. It's just longer.
Much longer. And more fragile, because every step has to succeed. One failure, and they're back at the bottom saying, I knew it.
I want to talk about something that's implicit in all of this, but hasn't been said directly. When Daniel bought that mouse, he was also buying something else, a story about himself. I'm the kind of person who uses AI to make purchasing decisions. That's an identity shift, not just a behavior shift.
That's a really sharp way to frame it. The behavioral change is small. You asked a chatbot instead of reading reviews. The identity change is bigger. You've incorporated AI into your self-concept as a decision maker. And once that's part of your identity, you're motivated to defend it. If someone criticizes AI recommendations, they're not just criticizing a tool. They're criticizing a choice you made about how to be a person in the world.
Which is why people get so defensive about their AI use. It's not about the tool. It's about the identity.
And it's why the in-law's skepticism might feel personal to Daniel in a way that's not entirely rational. He's not just hoping they enjoy the trip. He's hoping they validate a choice he's made about how he relates to technology. That's a lot of weight to put on a day trip.
The mouse was never just a mouse.
Never just a mouse.
So where does this leave us? We've got individual trust calibration through intermediate judgments. We've got social trust by proxy. We've got the default flip that marks the real Rubicon. And underneath all of it, this asymmetry. Trust builds slowly and breaks fast.
And I think the open question is about scale. We're talking about $70 mice and day trips, but the staircase doesn't stop. The same calibration mechanism that got Daniel comfortable with a mouse recommendation is going to get applied to larger and larger decisions. Financial planning, medical advice, legal guidance. The stakes keep rising and the verification keeps shrinking. And at some point, you're trusting an AI with something consequential because 100 small things went right and you stop checking.
The staircase leads somewhere, and we don't entirely know where.
We don't. And I think that's the thing Daniel's really asking. Not, is this mouse good, but where does this path go, and how do I know when I'm on it?
1997. I was booking honeymoons.
Go on.
Travel agent. Small office in Hartford. Had the brochures, the phone, the whole thing. Expedia was eating us alive, and we all knew it. One Tuesday, a couple comes in. I spend 40 minutes with them. They want Hawaii. I find them a package. $1,200, nice resort. I'd sent three couples there the year before. All of them came back happy. They nod, they thank me, they leave. Next day, they come back and book through Expedia. $1,200. Different resort. They told me the website had better pictures.
What happened?
They got there, and the resort was under construction. Jack hammers at 7 in the morning. The Expedia listing didn't mention it because the hotel hadn't told Expedia. I knew about it because the manager was my brother-in-law's neighbor, and he'd mentioned it over a barbecue. The couple came back, came into my office, and asked me why I hadn't warned them.
You did warn them.
I warned them about the resort they didn't book. I didn't warn them about the one they did book because I didn't know they were booking it. But they were angry at me anyway. I was the travel agent. I was supposed to know.
They trusted the algorithm over the human, and when the algorithm failed, they blamed the human.
That's the thing about trust. When it works, nobody thinks about it. When it breaks, someone has to be responsible. And the algorithm can't be responsible. It's not a person. You can't yell at it, so you yell at whoever's closest.
Daniel's in-laws, if the trip goes badly...
They're not going to be mad at the AI. They're going to be mad at Daniel. He made the book. He gave it to them. The AI is just... there. It doesn't have a face. Daniel has a face.
So the social dimension cuts both ways. The human curator gets the credit if it works, and the blame if it doesn't.
Always. I watched it happen for 3 years until the office closed. Every time the website got it right, the website was brilliant. Every time it got it wrong, the customer service line lit up. The algorithm never had to apologize. Some kid in a call center in Phoenix did.
Did you ever use an online booking site yourself after all that?
Not until 2014, and I still check 3 different sites and call the hotel directly before I book. My wife says it's pathological.
It's not pathological. You've just got a trust calibration that's been shaped by watching the failure pattern up close. Most people only see the successes. You saw the failures.
I saw the failures, and I saw who cleaned them up. It was never the algorithm. It was always some person who had nothing to do with building it and no power to fix it. That's what I think about when people talk about trusting AI. Who's going to clean up when it's wrong?
The answer right now is whoever's closest. The user, the curator, the son-in-law who made the book.
That's fine for a $70 mouse. You return it, you move on. It's less fine for the thing Daniel's in-laws are doing, where the cost isn't money, it's a relationship. And it's a lot less fine for the things people are going to be trusting AI with in 5 years.
The staircase doesn't stop.
It doesn't stop, and nobody's building a railing.
I keep coming back to the asymmetry you mentioned earlier. Trust breaks faster than it builds. Hilbert just described the breaking part in detail. One bad honeymoon, and those people probably never trusted an online booking site again. But the building part. We don't really know how many successes it takes to earn durable trust.
The research doesn't give us a clean number, it's context-dependent. In low-stakes domains, maybe 3 to 5 consistent successes start to shift the default. In high-stakes domains, it could be dozens. And some people never get there. Their prior skepticism is strong enough that they discount every success as luck or attribute it to something other than the AI.
Which means there's a segment of the population for whom the staircase simply doesn't exist. They're not going to walk up it, no matter how many steps you build.
That's fine, honestly. Nobody's obligated to trust AI, but it creates a weird dynamic where some people are delegating more and more of their decision-making to machines while others are opting out entirely, and those two groups are increasingly living in different information environments.
Different realities.
Potentially. If I'm using AI to filter my news, recommend my purchases, plan my trips, and you're doing all of that manually, we're making different decisions based on different inputs. Over time, that divergence compounds.
The staircase leads to different places for different people.
Right. And Daniel's question, what are these Rubicon moments? I think the answer is that they're not the same for everyone. For some people, it's a purchase. For others, it's a workplace task. For others, it's a health recommendation. For others, it never happens at all. The Rubicon is personal. But once you cross it, you're in a different relationship with the technology, and that relationship keeps deepening unless something breaks it.
When something breaks it, the fall is fast.
Faster than the climb. Always.
If you take one thing from this, I think it's the default flip. That's the real Rubicon. The moment you stop treating AI as something to verify and start treating it as something to trust, unless it gives you a reason not to. You might not notice when it happens, but everything after that's different.
The second thing is what Hilbert said about who cleans up. Trust isn't just about whether the AI is right. It's about what happens when it's wrong. Right now, the answer is, you do. The human in the loop isn't there to improve the AI's accuracy. They're there to absorb the liability. That's the part of the trust equation nobody wants to talk about.
We'll be back soon. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running. And for the honeymoon story I'm going to be thinking about for a while.
If you've had your own micro-Rubicon moment, a small leap of faith with AI that changed how you relate to the technology, we want to hear about it. Send it to prompts@myweirdprompts.com. You might hear it on a future episode.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. See you soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.